What's up, everybody? This is Tanner from TanmanBaseballFan.com, and I wanted to drop an episode tonight, number one, just because it's been a little while. It hasn't been too terribly long since I've dropped an episode, but I had a pretty fun topic to talk about, and these are backdoored cards. And let me talk about these a little bit, and I think we'll probably go a little deeper, depending on how much I can remember as I'm going. But let's define what they are. So what is a backdoor card? I tried to actually coin the term NMPC cards, I think, not meant for public consumption or something like that. These cards are typically cards that are either that, I mean, there's a number of ways that they can come out into public, but ultimately these are cards that were not really meant to be sold. They weren't pack pulled cards. That's ultimately the number one common theme, is that these cards were not pulled from packs. So most commonly you'll see cards that might be missing serial numbers, and that could be from back stock or something similar, from sheets that were uncut, where somebody cut them down to size and sold them on the market. And they'll be called proofs or prototypes or samples. Sometimes that term is correct, sometimes it's not. So it's very interesting, because sometimes you have these cards that are very collectible, other times they're not really. And I think the standard by which we measure them is how much their pack pulled counterparts go for. So a lot of times, let's say, for instance, if you have a card that's numbered out of, I don't know, a newer one that's numbered out of 500 or something. Let's take a card, for example, that is really typically only worth like a dollar. And then you have the same card that's missing the serial number. A lot of times that card is going to go for more than the pack pulled version. Now, if we get into rarer types of cards, that actually tends to flip. So let's say if you have a highly sought after card that's out of number 25, the card that's sought after that's out of 25 will typically go for more than the one that's missing the serial number. Now, this needs to be really kind of scrutinized on a case-by-case basis, because it really depends. It depends on how the card, like what the card is, how it came to market, and so on and so forth. If a card was merely stolen by an employee, or maybe the printing company printed a few extra and kept the back stock, because I think I've heard that before as well, and chopped it up, then there's a limited market. I think a lot of people typically want the quote-unquote real deal. I'll give you kind of one example of what I found that I thought was like really cool, but I don't really go after this stuff anymore. Currently, that is. I think there was a 1988 score, I believe it was 88, Young Superstars, Canseco. Now, these cards were typically glossy. Well, I ran into a guy that worked at the company that Score farmed out the production, like the printing to, of the sheets. And for some reason, they ended up not using them or something like that. So the company had 50 or so sheets of 88 Score Young Superstars that were in their back stock. Now, the difference was that these cards did not have a glossy front, which is interesting. And really, when you look at it, it really isn't interesting, I guess. It's they literally just didn't put the laminate down or whatever. And that's it. But as a super collector years ago, I was so pumped about that, and I ended up getting a sheet just to cut out a non-glossy version myself. And it was kind of a, I think for player collectors, Not all player collectors like this stuff. But some player collectors, especially super collectors or player collectors, love it. And so the factory one, the quote-unquote pack pulled version, probably worth 10 cents, right? Well, there's no quote-unquote market value for the non-glossy because there's not really, you know, there's basically one source. It was the guy that had them, and nobody really knew much about them. So, you know, you could probably get, I don't know, $5, $10, whatever it is, $20. I just have no clue. So that's one example of a card going for more. So now another option, we're going to look at 1998 Donner's Crusade. If I could stop coughing. Sorry, guys. There's a horrible allergies I have here. But I'll try to pause it and cough off camera whenever I can. But anyways, so... So 98 Crusade, we'll take a look at the, you know, they obviously have three versions. They have the red, the purple, and the green. Green is the F-250, purple is F-100, red's F-25. The red Crusades are considered legit grail cards. Like, they're incredible. So, I've seen these in a couple different flavors. So you obviously have the serial numbered pack pulled versions, and you also have the executive prototypes. Those are the ones that were not pack pulled, and they have XX dash whatever number on the back, and they came from executives. So. And then there's another version that have no numbers I've seen. Now, I don't know exact sales data on this, but I would be willing to bet this, and I do have some sales data. Typically, the executive prototypes will sell for more than the pack pulled counterparts. The non-serial numbered ones, if I had to guess, they might not sell for as much as the pack fold versions. So why? What's the difference? Well, I would like to put the argument out there that it's because of provenance. You don't know necessarily where those non-serial numbered cards are from. They could have been sheets that were pulled in, and I'm speaking from a place of non-education, I guess you could say, when it comes to the non-serial numbered Crusades. But if they're like others, then they were either cut from sheets or backdoored, or sometimes, you know, they could just be dealer samples. That's another possibility. But as far as the executive prototype samples, the ones that have the XX on the back, they have rock solid provenance. We know where they came from. And it makes it extra special because there's so few of them as well. Now, rarity alone obviously does not make a card valuable. In fact, that can hurt the value sometimes. And maybe at some point we'll go down that rabbit hole at some point down the road. But for now, that's a very good point. And I'll give you another example too, which is kind of a fun thing. I think I mentioned a couple episodes ago how I picked up quite possibly the grail of all grail cards, the 96 certified mirror gold Jose Canseco, as a double. Like, I have two of them now, which is ridiculously insane. And to tell you how insane this is, I spent years and years seeking out these cards, like one of these. And I even reached out to people on the PSA registry. I did all kinds of things and put out want ads, like reward, we'll give reward and everything. Not a peep. Like, it wasn't until after my super collecting was done that I actually landed one, which is crazy. So the difference is, let me tell you, which is interesting, is the one that I have that I just got as a double is actually from the collection of a top former Pinnacle executive, which is interesting. Okay, so because there's no other extra markings, it's just something we know that where they came from. So that's pretty cool. There's also been a question out there, like, we know that 30 were printed. Is it possible that this is a 31st print, or did one of the 30 get stuck behind, held back for the Pinnacle executive? Either way, I really like the fact that there's a little bit of a differentiation of provenance, like not just, you know, because again, there's no XX on the back or anything like that, but to know that it was, you know, really made for and in the collection of a top executive over there makes it really special for me. Now, does everybody think of it that way? I'm not really sure. I don't have a clue. All I know is for me is I think, and the jury's still out, I'm not sure which one I'm going to keep ultimately, because one of them is going to be traded away eventually at some point. But the question for me is, which one am I going to keep? I am leaning toward keeping the non-pack pulled version. And in the end, I guess it really doesn't matter because it's the exact same card. There's literally no difference that you can see. Like the one that I have that's from the exec is graded by PSA, but I could crack that. If I crack that out and shuffle it with the other one, nobody would know, no one would be the wiser. They wouldn't know the difference. In fact, my other mirror gold I had in the past was graded by PSA. So if you see a 7 in the registry, that's gone. It's cracked out now. So anyways, that's one thing that's pretty interesting. And it all comes down to the provenance. And I think the next one, which is interesting, is a 97 totally certified platinum gold. In my opinion, this is quite possibly one of my favorite cards ever in my entire collection. And a lot of it is, interestingly enough, the pack pulled version does have a serial number. They're serial number to 30. Mine does not. Mine actually comes from a collection of a very prominent person in the hobby. And I'm very thankful for it, and I've gotten to become friends with him. And that makes it all the more special. And I actually come to find out as well that this was a dealer sample, which is pretty cool too. So not some random willy-nilly, sheet cut or backdoor card or anything, which by the way, those are kind of fun too. But the fact that they are, that it came from somebody's collection that's like actually a very important person in the hobby, and that is a dealer sample, that makes it all the more special to me, because there very likely might not be any others out there that are like this. So now with that said, is that card going to be more valuable than the pack pulled version to, you know, another person out there? I don't know. I would imagine that for set collectors, at least, they might not want it as much as the pack pulled version. Now, for Jose collectors, I couldn't imagine them wanting a pack pulled version over this one, but it all depends. It's on a collector by collector basis, I guess. So there's one other card which is really neat that will go back down low end, and my friend John I sold to him in a lot, and I think, if I remember correctly, I think he just gave it back to me, which is cool. It's a, I believe it was a 1995 Stadium Club Ringleaders card, and it's a crazy wild foil card. The difference is, this was a sheet cut, however, which makes it extra special, because the card itself is probably I don't know, 50 cents a dollar, $2, I don't know. But on the back of it, the entire back of the card is covered by a sticker that's bright green, and it's got part of the signature of somebody signing off of it as it being a proof. And I believe there's part of a date or something that shows before Stadium Club actually was listed. Now that card to me is like a really cool card. I don't know what the premium would be on that if I ever sold it. I can imagine it'd be pretty significant, but the point that it's just a really, just a really neat card, you guys. Like, it's really, really cool to have. Like, I see it as kind of a piece of history. But again, it's because I can actually look back to see where it came from. Now, with that said, my collection that I had prior, like when I actually decided to sell off the bulk of my collection in mid-2018 and did so, my collection was absolutely filled with cards that were oversized, quote-unquote, proof cuts and blank backs and blank fronts and, you know, everything in between. Excuse me. Which, they're cool. They're really cool. But there's something about being able to trace back where they came from. And I think that translates ultimately to a much higher value, like significantly higher. Because if you don't know where they came from, it's like, okay, what's the big deal? But a good story, a good story is worth a lot in my book. So it even, I even want to kind of touch a little bit on modern cards, which is great. So the there's a card they have that's a laundry tag. It's a National Treasures laundry tag. It's really kind of a neat card. Like, when I saw it at auction or on eBay, probably about maybe 5 years ago or so, my jaw dropped. Like, I was so excited. I couldn't hit buy it now fast enough. Come to find out, that tag is actually from a rookie year jersey of Canseco. And I was able to find the jersey that was sold at an auction house. So I was able to go in Photoshop and, you know, overlay my card with the tag on top of the jersey that sold. And it was really a fun thing. It was really kind of neat. So I'd love to be able to find out what games Jose played to actually have action shots of him wearing it. That would be really fun. But in any event, it was really kind of a neat neat deal to be able to have that and do that. It adds that much more to the card. And I was able to do that to two other cards, which was really fun. So one's really fun, the other one's like the greatest ever. I might have talked about before already, but about a month or two ago, I landed a bat barrel of Canseco, which is really cool. And somebody on Facebook group actually alerted me to the auction that the bat itself sold from, because apparently the bat itself was like a really rare one. And he wasn't doing it to be like, hey, cool card, here's this listing. No, he was actually pretty ticked. He's like, man, why would they waste such a cool bat on a card? You know, well, I mean, I'm thankful for it, but I was able to go in again and overlay the barrel on top of the picture of the game used bat in Photoshop. And it's just so neat. So neat to be able to do that stuff. But anyway, so the last one is really fun. It actually has to do with Jose's time with the Rangers. And the cool thing about it is I noticed that, I don't remember exactly what happened, but I do know that on my website, tanmanbaseballfan.com, you can actually go in my blog area, and I wrote an article about it. I think it might be the last one or two articles ago that I wrote. So, which is really kind of a fun thing. But ultimately, Panini ended up buying game used jersey of the Rangers of Canseco. So they've got a number of patches and everything, and I noticed that there's a really unique patch on the jersey, like a sleeve patch. And it got me thinking. I was like, huh, I wonder if there's you know, any correlation with this and the time when Jose had the ball bounce off his head over the wall for a home run. And of course, again, his pitching mishap that probably cost him ultimately, when all said and done, the Hall of Fame. But we'll get into that another day. But anyway, as it turns out, it looks like the jersey that Panini bought was the exact jersey that Jose wore when those two mishaps happened in May of 1993. So they're not just like regular willy-nilly patches. They actually have baseball history behind them. And to me, that just skyrockets the amazingness of them, the interesting part of them. And you don't have to have a crazy patch to kind of enjoy that, though, because, pardon the dog in the background, because if Panini bought that jersey that Jose wore, which it does look like is the case, as per the auction house even that sold the jersey to Panini, then it means that all of the Grace Watch regular jersey relic cards that Panini made of Jose during that time period would be from that same jersey. So just a really, really cool piece of piece of information to have there. So anyways, I'm going to wrap it up there. And by the way, one other thing that was kind of fun. I didn't say anything yesterday because ultimately nobody really cares except for me. But yesterday was the 35th anniversary of my collecting career. So I actually say something every year about it. But I had a journal entry marked March 12th, 1989, when I was a kid, talking about how I was just getting into collecting baseball cards. So I used that as the anniversary, the collecting birthday, so to speak. So it was kind of a fun thing. Now I was really down because I was working on something pretty significant when it comes to collecting, and it seemingly didn't work out. So I was really kind of upset about that because I was really hoping to be able to land something really super cool on my 35th anniversary. But, you know, again, things don't work out all nice and neat a lot of times, and that's okay. You know, that's you take the L and you move on, right? Hope for a W down the road. But anyway, so regardless, I gotta say, you guys, like, this hobby has been incredibly fun and distracting when it needs to be distracting, sometimes more distracting than it should be, if I'm being honest. But very thankful for it. Very thankful for the friendships that I've had because of this hobby as well. And gosh, you guys, like, the excitement of adding that new special piece to the collection or trading or working a deal, nothing beats it, you know, in this hobby anyways. So, but anyways, as always, thank you guys for listening, and hope this has helped you in some way, shape, or form, at least for a little bit of form of entertainment. So, till next time, Tanner from TMNBaseballFan.com, signing off.